Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Hicklett, he's had a goal! Oh, it's an own goal! Came back off the crossbar and hit poor Richard Wright before bouncing back in. It was a fabulous hit by Hicklett.
The Space Shuttle Discovery has docked with the International Space Station as construction work on the project continues. The operation was made more difficult by a technical failure which forced the pilots to dock for the first time without radar.
Mowbray going up there and equalising!
Just another day at the office for Peter Moore, president and COO of Sega of America Dreamcast, the San Francisco-based arm of the Japanese gaming giant that has managed to push the Dreamcast console system into the promised land of 2 million sell-throughs. As an industry, video gaming is bigger than Hollywood.
Oh, it's on for Mela! Yes! From behind, the second string striker has Ipswich Town in front of Wembley.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Greatest Games podcast on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller. Jonathan Wilson is with me. And of course, with us this week, it's Adam Rutherford, geneticist, author of How to Argue with a Racist, among others, broadcaster who hosts Inside Science on BBC Radio 4, and a frequent guest on other BBC Science programmes. Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, chaps. Nice to be here.
Pleasure to have you with us. Today we go back to the year 2000, the playoff final that ended Barnsley 2, Ipswich Town 4. Adam, why have you chosen this game?
just when you said that score there, I just had a big grin on my face because I haven't thought about it for, well, a few years. But it was, I know, you know, everyone always says it's your marriage and the birth of your children. Other than that, it was singularly the greatest day of my life. And my dad agrees, and my brother agrees, and my granny agrees, because we were all there together at Wembley. And it was, that was Ipswich into the Premiership for the first time in, 7 years. Mm. And it was such a dramatic day, and I'm too young to have really remembered Ipswich's glory days in 78 and 81. So it was just magnificent.
Yeah, it was one of those perfect sort of cup finals for, you know, if you were an Ipswich Town fan in that sunny day at Wembley, loads of goals coming from behind, and obviously the prize, Jonathan, for a team going up to the Premiership, as it was called then, is enormous.
Yeah, it is. And you know, you're right. It's you look at that now, and that is what you remember Wembley Cup Finals as being. The aesthetic of Wembley, the pitch, sort of somehow the fact that it was distant from the stands made it more special at the old Wembley. Mm-hmm. The fact that it was almost like this pitch, this game is happening on this pitch. It's too sacred for the fans to be too close to it. We got to have a bit of distance. And for Ipswich, you know, it wasn't that this came from nowhere. They've been hammering on the door for several years. And I hadn't actually realised, George Burley had been there from 1994, so there's been a long process of evolution to get to this point.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. And also it was in fact the last ever game at that old Wembley as well. So there was a real sense of how special it was. And I've got very clear memories of, you know, walking down from the station, and the Barnsley fans are on the right hand side and the Ipswich fans are on the left. And it was very, you know, Ipswich has always had this reputation for being a family club and a friendly club, and it was that. It was just joyous from beating Bolton in the semis all the way to the end of Wembley.
See, I'm intrigued by this. Was this the first time you'd been to Wembley?
It was. No, that's not true. I'd seen you two there.
First time you've been for a football match, though.
First time I'd been for a football match, yeah.
Because the first time I went was for the cup final in 92, the FA Cup final, went on and lost to Liverpool. And, you know, I'd seen on telly, and in those days when you had the huge sort of, yeah, 6, 7, 8 hour build-ups to the cup finals, and your Wembley Way, walking down Wembley Way was part of the experience and part of the day out. And for us in 92, it meant nothing because it was hammering down with rain and nobody was sort of mingling there. Everybody was just sort of dashing along. And I went back to Wembley, and that was a pretty disappointing game from a Sunderland point of view. It wasn't just we lost, we just didn't turn up. And then the following year, I went back for England 0, Norway 0, probably the worst game of football ever played. And for my sort of sense of Wembley was of something kind of actually pretty underwhelming and pretty disappointing. Mm. And then I went back in 98 for the playoff final, and it was, although we lost, it was the perfect day. It was, a bright, sunny day. It was really hot and humid. Wembley Way was brilliant. It was incredibly sort of friendly atmosphere between Sunderland and Charlton fans. It was very good humoured. Then, a low 4-4 draw, lost on penalties. An absolutely sensational game of football that everybody will always remember. So I'm very glad I got that perfect Wembley experience. So I'm guessing for you, partly with the result, but partly the fact the weather was so good, was Wembley Way what you hoped it would be?
Yes, it absolutely was. And it was, I was there with my dad and my gran and my brother. And so it was a real, sense of family occasion, and just walking down Wembley Way, we bumped into loads of people that we know, because Ipswich is pretty small, and we lots of, basically everyone in Ipswich had tried to get tickets for the final. And it was gorgeous. And it wasn't sort of raucous. It was sort of gently wonderful. It was a very positive experience. I may be saying something completely opposite if we'd lost, utterly forgetful, but it was, and also, like you said, been tapping at that door for a long time. Part of the frustration of being an Ipswich fan, especially during that era, is that Burley he introduced a really open play of football, sort of European style, lots of passing from the midfield. We had Jim Magilton was this sort of midfield general who was, that's quite generous to him. but we were an attractive team, and I think we really struggled in the first division because we were coming up against lumpers and hoofers and who would just play, kick us hard and stomp us down. So finally to get onto the big stage and play some attractive football was it was glorious.
Yeah, I mean that midfield three of Magilton, Matt Holland, and Jermaine Wright. They're all really good passing players, aren't they?
Yeah, and Matt Holland is, apart from John Walker, who is my favourite player of all time, Matt Holland is my super captain. He'd be my first pick on any Ipswich team. And a solid guy as well, just really upstanding, honourable chap. So it was a funny team of sort of all mid-level, hard-working, very... Mm-hmm. positive thinking grinders who really needed to get out of the first division and into the Premiership, where they could play their best possible football against much better teams. And that indeed is what happened the following season.
Yeah. I mean, Kieran Dyer had left the previous season, hadn't he? So, I mean, what was the sense there? Was he just one of those players where you looked at him and thought, right, he'll be off because he's clearly too good for us? Or what was the sense with him going to Newcastle?
Well, there was that's another thing about being an Ipswich fan. Like, we've always had a really good youth training program, and we've generated players from, you know, from age 14 and up, and people like Dyer and Marcus Bent and I forget now. But anyway, but there was always a sense that when people had come through the youth system that they would eventually go, and it was only a matter of time. But then another thing happened, which was a great surprise to us, which was the introduction of Marcus Stewart into the team a couple of years earlier. So, you know, a guy who was, I think he was 27 or 28 when he came to Ipswich, and he's a natural striker. But really, you know, you expect strikers to be more flairy and younger and more athletic than Stewart. And he came and he was the top goal scorer that season and was just epically good. I think he even got an England cap a couple of years later. Is that right? Have I remembered that right?
I'm not sure about that. But I mean, he arrived for $2.5 million from Huddersfield. So I mean, I guess that was part of the, you know, Dyer had gone for $6 million. So I guess that was part of the, part of the money. But I mean, you'd had that very good front three with Johnson, David Johnson and Scowcroft and Naylor, Richard Naylor. So, I mean, he was sort of disrupting something that already worked quite well. So if my memory is right, there was certainly a period at the beginning of that season when there was a sort of fear that he wouldn't quite fit, and he'd actually, you know, he'd broken up something that was quite effective.
I don't recall that, but I mean you're much more likely to be right about that than I am. David Johnson was an excellent player, and I really liked him a lot, but he was quite injury prone.
Naylor was in this game.
Halfway
through the first half.
That's right. Naylor was a decent hard man, and I think I'm right in saying that Scowcroft didn't play in the final. I think he was injured.
That's right, yeah. He was injured just before, and he was the player of the season for Ipswich that year, which was obviously a huge blow. Just to clarify, as you were chatting there, I just checked, Marcus Stewart didn't actually get an England cap. There was calls for him to be given one. He may have been called up for a squad. I can't quite remember that, but he didn't get an England cap. But yeah, it was an interesting season, this, in England's second tier. The league was called the First Division, as you said back then. A few years later, it would become the Championship. It was the first season that the Football League got rid of the traditional 1-11 numbering on players' shirts in favour of squad numbers and players' names. Jonathan, do you feel that was a bad move?
No, I was an advocate of squad numbers very early.
How were you?
This was the season when Charlton had
under Kerbishley.
They had a, was he called Stuart Barmer? Was that his name? Who wore the number one shirt as a midfielder?
Well, that's just poor behaviour, isn't it?
It's mad.
I mean, you have to draw the line somewhere.
No, I'll tell you why. It was sort of a very early realisation that players should just have their own shirts. Just seeing Sunderland players in shirts that were the wrong size for them.
That's fair.
Why would you do that? Just you know, give a player two or three shirts for the start of the season and just trust them to look after them and bring them back. You know, that seemed an obvious thing to do.
Yeah, you don't want to be growing into those. I mean, I always find it interesting at the 1998 World Cup, all the England shirts were extra large, which is why it looks so baggy on Michael Owen. I know shirts were baggier back then, which is probably one of the reasons, but yeah, very strange indeed. But you mentioned Charlton, they won the league. Joe Rawls, Manchester City finished second, Ipswich were third, and Barnsley were fourth.
So Charlton had gone up in 98, come down in 99, then they went straight back up in 2000. Like that curve.
That's right, yeah. Well, Man City, of course, nearly threw it away.
Yeah.
Nearly threw away automatic promotion on the final day. And Ipswich was second for a short time, but then Manchester City turned it around against Blackburn. So were you, because you get a little sniff of automatic promotion, was it? Did it feel like it was... I don't know, not a drag, but a slight disappointment, having had a little taste of, or a little sniff of automatic promotion that you then had to go into the playoffs, Adam.
Yes, absolutely, and just the fact that we've been in the playoffs and hadn't made it past the semis in the playoffs for the previous four seasons, just there was definitely a clear sense of, oh, you know, here we go again. There's another waste of two matches. And also, you know, that sort of ongoing criticism of the playoffs as a system, mm-hmm. that especially if you failed to get through on the playoffs, people really stick to, which is this is just a way of the league extracting two or three more games out of teams when actually it would just be fair to put the first three up. So there's that definite sense in Ipswich of that having failed.
Definitely. I mean, when you finish third, I think that is always a sense. And the fact that you had to play Bolton in the semi-final again, as you had the previous year.
Yeah, who came in sixth, presumably, because it's always 3-6, yeah, 4-5, right, yeah, isn't it? Yeah, so there was that. And then, so definitely a sense that he was, oh, here we go again. But of course, you know, in retrospect, that it's easy for me to say that now because it turned out so gloriously brilliant, mm-hmm, and kept the momentum going for another year after that, even though we got relegated.
Yeah, I think if you could, you'd rather win the playoffs than finish second, I think, if you see what I mean.
Yeah,
you
get... I think that's probably true.
But
I don't know. I guess it depends. It depends how you finish second. If you finish second by,
yeah, true,
yeah, coming from 3-0 down on the last day to win 4-3 to
yeah, okay, yeah, fair, yeah.
But there's definitely more of a sense of climax going up through the playoffs.
Yeah, because when a few seasons ago when Fulham finished third, and then they won the playoffs, you know, it was fantastic. You're thinking that they could get second. Obviously, Cardiff sort of pipped them to that. But I thought you might say that, Adam, with Ipswich having been in the playoffs for so, you know, a number of seasons before that. And also, if my memory serves me correctly, Manchester City had a huge celebration on the second to last game of the season, as if they'd already been promoted automatically. Could have been maybe the last game at Main Road, or it was certainly the last home game of the season.
That's a very City thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I remember everyone was saying, "Oh, you've been a bit silly there, lads." And I think they had to go away to Ewood Park to Blackburn. And of course, when they went behind, you know, if I was an Ipswich Town fan, I would be looking at that going, "Oh, this is glory. This is one of those inevitable things." But of course, they turn it round. However, though, Adam, we were treated to a rather a massive goal fest in that semi-final between Bolton and Ipswich. Ipswich going away and winning. 1-5-3 at home in the first game. I mean, what were your memories of that?
The second leg was the 5-3.
Sorry.
2-2 in the first and 5-3 in the second.
Yeah. Forgive
and
me.
It was. So I was listening on the radio. Dad was at the match. Mm-hmm. And this is pre-mobile phone days. So, well, I mean, people had mobiles. I didn't. I had a pager. he was paging me the score, which was, it's a very dad thing to do that, because, of course, I was listening live on the radio at the time. But it was one of those sort of low expectations, because the first round had been a draw. It was low expectations that here we go again. We're either going to lose, or it'll go to penalties, or it'll be, you know, just be. No, it doesn't go to penalties in the semis, does it? But it was just going to be tedious, and then all of a sudden it went nuts. And my only real memory of watching the highlights is that is people going on the pitch, and just sort of the dawning realization that actually we were going to Wembley for the first time in, well,
when since 1978?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, cup final. Mm. That's exactly right. And I was too young for that. I was only 3 at the time. And I don't really remember the UEFA final either, because I was 81. So there was all this backstory for being an Ipswich fan that I was very aware of, because if those three stars on our jerseys are very important to us, because Norwich have none. No, that's not true. They've got one for the Milk Cup in 80 something or
85 when they beat Sunderland.
Another
Wembley defeat for Sunderland. I was just saying, when we were talking about playoffs, just thinking, going up through the playoffs, you get a sense of climax. Well, yeah, I wouldn't know. Yeah, all I've experienced is losing the playoffs, I think, 4 times, certainly 3 times at Wembley, and then we lost to Palace under McCarthy in 2004, would that have been? I think it was. That game against Bolton, I think we should talk about that, because it's such an incredible sequence of events, and partly just the fact that you have George Burley's side playing this attractive passing football, the 3-5-2, you know, the fact that because you've got the three defenders, because you've got three players in central midfield, you don't have to have sort of a hard man in the midfield. I mean, obviously with Tony Mowbray at the back, you certainly did have a hard man there. But the midfield, you can have three passers. Again, Sam Allardyce's Bolton, who have hard man everywhere, are playing a much more direct style. And, you know, 2-0 up within sort of, I don't know, 25 minutes, half an hour of the first leg. And then that brilliant dipping volley from Marcus Stewart, which, Nick Ames from The Guardian is an Ipswich fan, and he talks about that goal as being the first moment when the teenage him thought, actually, Marcus Stewart might be good for us. But he'd been a Stewart skeptic. I think there have been some issues with Stewart sort of not being necessarily the most professional trainer and sort of, you know, having quite a nice time. And so I think there'd been a sort of skepticism among some fans. And then he scores that brilliant volley. And that's the moment when it's sort of actually, maybe there is something there.
I don't remember. You've got a much clearer memory of it than I do. I've watched it on the, I've got the VHS copy of The Road to Wembley, so that, you know, obviously dates me. You're right about Stewart and the sense that, well, he had a slight look about him. There were rumours about how much he drank. There were other rumours locally, which, you know, it's just the gossip mill and they're probably almost certainly nonsense. But I have a clear sense that his ability to put goals away, often at short range, so not that, you know, the long dipping one you're talking about, but he was a high scorer, and I think that is something that Ipswich have always lacked, and particularly in the last couple of seasons, that just having a ruthless, actual, proper striker who's going to score game after game, I think that was something that Stewart did in a way that we hadn't had for the previous, you know, many years.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting as well that I think he and Kevin Phillips, who obviously had their heyday roughly at the same time, yeah, they both have very good first seasons in the Premier League. This season we're talking about now was the season when Phillips got his 30 goals and won the Golden Boot. Stewart obviously then does brilliantly the following season when Ipswich finished fifth. And that's a type of player that at the top level doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah,
I don't want to say they're just poachers because they're both of them are more than that. Both of them kind of, their movement was good. They were capable of scoring that long-range goal. But they're not players who you'd want to lead the press. They're not players who could play up front by themselves. They needed other players around them. And I think it is a type of player. You still see it down at League One, maybe in the Championship as well. But you don't really get them in the Premier League anymore. And I think Stewart and Phillips are sort of the last hurrah of that style of what level would you say? They're obviously not quite international level, but very good domestic level strikers.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Okay, gentlemen.
And then, sorry, the second leg. We need to talk about the second leg. In the second leg, 5-3, three penalties, Bolton completely losing it, Mike Whitlow being sent off. Probably, I mean, arguably about half a dozen players could have been sent off. It's an incredibly violent game. Magilton gets a kicking of his life, scores a hat-trick anyway.
Yeah.
Just a sensationally dramatic game of football.
Yeah, Magilton was, well, I'd say I never really rated Super Jim, and he was amongst our, where we sit, on the Cobbold Stand, there was always quite a lot of just, this guy is a journeyman. He's a bit brutish for this elegant style of football that Burley's trying to play in the run up to 2001, and then that match was exactly what we needed in that match. And absolutely, he just charged through everyone. And I think he scored an amazing long range goal in that game as well. Have I remembered that correctly?
He gets a penalty. Then I think his second goal is a brilliant goal. Then he misses a penalty. Then he scores a penalty. So yeah, I think his second goal in that game is
an eventful game.
Because he the third penalty he didn't take. He let Jamie Clapham take it. So yeah, he scored one penalty, missed one penalty. So yeah, one of his other two goals was you're quite right. Is a brilliant long range effort.
Jamie Clapham. See, he was one of my faves. He was a rather cultured player, quite, you know, quiet but sort of solid workman. He fitted very much in that Matt Holland sort of sensibility. God, these are names I haven't thought about for a long
time. Yeah, and a great engine getting up and down from left wing back.
Right, gentlemen, let's have a quick break, and after which we'll talk about the match itself.
Support wide is provided by Clapham. It's Clapham's cross, it's Stewart, it's 3-1 Ipswich! And Suffolk sniffs the premiership! What a buy! What a buy by George Burley and pals! Marcus Stewart just might be the one who takes them to the promised land.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. Are you struggling to find something to watch during lockdown? You've drained Netflix, rewatched all your old favourites, and now you need something new? Well, we're here to help. Join us for Clash of the Titles, the podcast where two movies with something in common go head to head in a fight to the death.
Release the Kraken.
Well, not death. We just decide which one is better.
When they do a long shot of the crowd in the Ivory Tower, it's different to the close-up. And if you look closely, you can see E.T., Mickey Mouse, Chewbacca, Ewoks, and C-3PO.
So when Wolfgang Peterson went to Spielberg, went, could you maybe re-edit my movie? Steven Spielberg went, yeah. Do you know what I'm probably going to cut out? E.T., mate. I made that. Find your new favourite movie or revisit an old classic with me, Alex Zane, Vicky Crompton and Chris Tilley. New episodes out every Monday and Thursday.
Clash of the Titles is a Stakhanov production.
Craig Hignett started the ball rolling for Barnsley. He's their top scorer this season. Hignett to keep them in it. 3-2. Life in the tie. Life in Barnsley.
Welcome back to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. So then, gentlemen, we come to that fateful sunny day at Wembley Stadium. It was, as you mentioned earlier, it was the last domestic competitive fixture to be played at the original Wembley Stadium. And we said that Ipswich, which hadn't been to Wembley since 1978, I believe it was Barnsley's first ever appearance at Wembley. And Barnsley, they were the top scorers in the league that season with 88. Quite crucially, as would be the case in this game, they had a much poorer defensive record, specifically away from home, than the three teams above them. But they had quite a lot of goals in them. Craig Hignett scored a few, and Neil Shipperley as well, Darren Barnard. So, Jonathan, going into the final, do you remember who you had down as favourites or who you quite fancied? Was it free scoring Barnsley, or was it, well, I suppose Ipswich had put seven past Bolton in the semi-final, so they weren't shy of goals themselves.
Well, I think my sense of it was this is another fascinating clash of styles. That you know, we've seen when Ipswich play against Sam Allardyce's Bolton, there's something about that mix of a cultured passing of one team with the aggression and direct football of the other has produced these two incredible games. And of course, Dave Bassett's Barnsley were not that dissimilar to Sam Allardyce's Bolton. You're very straightforward 4-4-2, get it forward quickly to Shipperley and to Bruce Dyer. You know, very much of that. mid-1980s position of maximum opportunity, get it to the back post. You know, a very typical style of football, pretty unsophisticated style of football, but a style of football that had brought them a lot of goals. I mean, they finished 5 points behind Ipswich. And I don't think there's much doubt that Ipswich are the better team. But given we knew of Ipswich's record, given we knew that they'd had these 3 previous years of failure, there was a sense of, how are they going to react to this? Having said that, I think when you win a semi-final in the way they won it, you always have this, destiny in football is a funny thing in that it clearly doesn't exist. And yet, if enough people believe it exists, it can exist, if you see what I mean. it becomes self-fulfilling. Once, and you see it, when you have a goalkeeper makes half a dozen brilliant saves in the first half hour, and the other team gets it in their heads, oh, it's his day, we just can't score.
That's right. Mm.
And so I think you always wonder, you always think when a team has won in such dramatic circumstances, two things can happen. Either they're left emotionally drained, or they just start to think, we can do anything, it's our year. And then, of course, 6 minutes in, I guess if you're an Ipswich fan, you're getting a pretty clear indication it's not going to be your year.
No, that's exactly right. In fact, there was a specific turning point in the game from my emotional state, which was, it came after we were a goal down and David Johnson had been taken off. Craig Hignett, he scored after a few minutes. It actually bounced off Richard Wright. It hit the crossbar and then bounced back into the goal off Richard Wright. And Richard Wright was a real talisman for Ipswich for many years. He was top quality. So we're 1-0 down after, what was it?
Six minutes.
Yeah. And a ridiculous goal. I mean, Hignett's just... Mm. He's picked the ball up, okay, he hasn't been closed down, but he's 30, 35 yards out.
Yeah.
Fantastic shot, hits the bar.
Really quieted it, yeah.
And then just bounces down, hits poor Richard Wright sort of on the back of the arm and just sort of dribbles over the line.
Yeah. Roberto Di Matteo-esque kind of hit that was around that time.
It was quite
generous.
Quite
to Craig Hignett.
But it was a good hit though, Adam. You can't deny.
Yeah, no,
but also, I find it interesting. Marcus Stewart apparently said, he probably said this with hindsight, that they fancied it to be Barnsley in the final when Barnsley were playing against Birmingham, because Ipswich had beaten Barnsley 6-1 and 2-0 in the league that season. And he thought, we can do these. We got the better of them. But then, of course, as you say, after 6 minutes, a goal like that hits the underside of the bar and goes in. You're thinking, oh, bloody hell, this could be a long afternoon for us.
Yes, and we were sitting there and we went a bit quiet because you know what it's like when they score in the first 5 or 6 minutes of a match and it really takes a lot of the excitement away from the whole experience. but the turning point was it was not so much the equaliser, but it was when Richard Wright saved a penalty. Tony Mowbray, old journeyman, hard man at the back, who he headed it in from across. I think I think it was from Jim Magilton.
It was Jim Magilton. Jim Magilton's corner was cleared. It was worked back to him, and he bends in, and Mowbray arrives at the back post. Classic centre half goal.
Yeah, rising salmon. I don't know how many goals he'd scored that season, or indeed ever. But he was old too. He was like mid-30s.
38. I think he's 38.
That is incredible, isn't it?
But let me check that. But he was definitely late 30s, I think, rather than mid-30s. He was 36. Sorry, he was born on the day that Kennedy was shot.
Mm. How about that?
That's an amazing stat.
But Adam, Mowbray gets the equaliser, and then, as you say, Barnsley sort of fairly soon after get a penalty, and Richard Wright makes a big save, and he was talismanic for Ipswich back then, and that was one of Ipswich's big players producing a big moment in the match, and you feel that was when the tide turned for Ipswich.
Yes. So when he was defending a penalty, He'd put his hands up in the air. We called him X-Man. And he'd stand there. And he was a big guy. He was tall. So he'd stand there. And he also had a slight habit of coming off the line a bit early, which we didn't mind. And I've got a feeling he did do that in the Wembley match. But, he's standing there in this huge X shape, hands up. And I've got no recollection of how he saved the penalty, whether it was a glance off his thigh or if he dived beautifully to pad it away. But
he dived to his right, I can tell you.
Okay, and well, as soon as that had happened, that was when we had a sense, okay, it's game on now. It's the scores are leveled, and now we've just got a massive fillip just before the second half. So it's just second half is open for us to keep that momentum going. And Burnley was a dour manager as well. He had that sort of Scottish quietness. He was always very well presented and didn't ever get very overexcited about things like that. And I remember, we could see him from where we were sitting on the halfway line, about 10 rows back. My gran had been warned by a steward for shouting at the ref.
What did she? Well, I won't ask you what she was shouting. That's probably
fairly standard masturbatory comments about referee style.
Classic gran.
Yes. a steward, because we were sitting on the aisle, or I think I was on the aisle, and gran was next to me, and the steward in his fluorescent jacket came up and said something which we just thought was hilarious. But then into the second half, and that's when the memory becomes clearer. It's sort of we've talked about it a lot, and we've watched the videos, but it's more clear what the style of the second half was going to be like.
Well, and then soon after, Naylor scores for Ipswich, of course, and then Marcus Stewart, they give him the old 1-2, and they're looking pretty good.
Well, we've talked Naylor's about been... Ipswich's passing style, but actually both these goals are long balls. So 52 minutes, long ball from the back, Marcus Stewart flicks it on. Chris Morgan, of all people, misjudges it, and Naylor gets in, and it's obviously quite night. He obviously sees the keeper, sees Kevin Miller going down a bit early, just got clips it over him. Then 6 minutes later, a Mark Venus long ball. Naylor's touch to take it down is sensational. It sort of takes it on the outside of his foot, just kills it instantly. And it sort of holds up weight. Then Clapham on the overlap. We talked about how well he got up and down. And his cross and Stewart coming in makes it 3-1 with a really sort of precise glancing header in it at the far post.
Yeah. Yeah, great header.
Another thing that happened as well, which was just minor addition to the drama, is that Naylor got booked for he ripped his top off and headed for the left post after he scored, and he was a ginger, pasty white man, but shredded for the day, compared to other players on the team like maybe Tony Mowbray. But he ran around twirling his top and immediately got booked. And that's just, that's just annoying, isn't it? It's annoying when you get booked for that. But for it to happen at Wembley was just another tiny bit of drama. Yeah, so now it's 3-1.
But I mean, this was the age of the great playoff final, wasn't it? Yeah, there'd been Sunderland, Charlton, when Swindon went up and won 4-3, was that against Leicester, was it? It was a series of these brilliant finals in a row. And, there will always be drama. And sure enough, 12 minutes from time, Thomas cuts inside Mowbray. Mowbray's a little bit clumsy, brings him down. Yeah. And it's a penalty. This time Hignett takes it, scores. And suddenly it's 3-2 with 12 minutes to go.
Yep. Make me nervous talking about it.
When I say Thomas, that was Jeff Thomas. I have to say, I'd totally forgotten he'd gone to Barnsley from Crystal Palace.
Oh, they all went well, but Bruce Dyer and Neil Shipperley. I don't know if they were.
Big Palace contingent.
Well, because Dave Bassett was at Palace, wasn't he, for a time? And then Steve Coppell took over from him and got Palace promoted. Because Dave Bassett was a bit of a promotion specialist. Think of his time at Wimbledon and so on, but he didn't get it today. But yes, so going back to it, when Hignett scores the penalty, Adam, you must have been crapping yourself. Quite frankly.
Yes, I think that is
your grand language.
That was a fair assessment of us. We go a bit quiet again. We're still a goal up, but that's exactly the point where you think it's like having someone sent off, and that's the point where you start worrying.
Yeah.
It was quick, though, from memory. There were a lot of changes at that time, I seem to recall. There was they were both managers trying to slow things down and open up the game. Didn't Barnsley had an international playing for them who I can't remember who it was, but
Eric Tinkler, the South African midfielder, who actually went off for Jeff Thomas on the hour.
Oh, no, you're thinking of
Georgi Christoph, a Macedonian. Christoph came on for Bruce Dyer. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and I remember that being a sort of, bringing on a super sub at the end. But again, I guess, well, we did the same, didn't we, though? So, you know.
Well, last 7 minutes, Ipswich made two substitutions. So first of all, Martin Reusser comes on for Marcus Stewart. Yeah. And then Fabian Wilnes comes on for Jermaine Wright. Mm. And then I guess you have that moment. And, they are the best moments in football when it's the final seconds and suddenly your substitute, who's fresh, is cleaned through. He's in the half entirely by himself with the goalkeeper. And you know this is it. That all he's got to do is pretty much kick the thing straight. And suddenly a one-goal lead is a two-goal lead and you've won the game. And you had that glorious moment.
Yeah, it was. So Reusser was a flair player, and I don't know whether he was unpopular because there was a sense that he didn't quite fit into the team mentality. He'd been brought in late. He was relatively recent. He had sort of slightly foppish, floppy hair. But he was quality. He was a good player, a good striker, but never a fan favourite, at least from our domain. But then that happened, and it was. So I'm mixing up my own memories with rewatching it several times because there was in the commentary, which obviously I couldn't have been listening to because I was at the match, but in the in the commentary there is a line which is I for me as an Ipswich fan the greatest piece of commentary in the history of football because it just goes. When Reusser picks it up at about the halfway line, I think he diddles it around one of the defenders. And then, as you say, he was clear and then just twats it. And the commentary goes, Reusser, Premiership! And that was it. And that was how we felt. So my
sounds brother, very Peter Drury. I bet that was Peter Drury.
I think it was, actually. Yeah, I think it was. So my brother and I are big Star Wars fans. And he said that... I don't know whether your listeners or you guys remember the bit in Return of the Jedi when they finally land, they've beaten the Death Star and the huge spaceship crashes into the planet.
Spoilers, Adam.
Oh, sorry. Oh, God, the Rebels win. Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's dad. Anyway, there's this bit where Admiral Ackbar, the leader of the Rebel Alliance, and they've just basically won. And he's standing, and he sort of slumps down in his chair.
I know the scene you mean.
Do you know what I mean? Right. My brother said, that's what I did. That we're all on our feet. Reusser scores. And instead of leaping around like a maniac and hugging everyone, he says that I sat down and leant back in my chair, just looking
job done.
Ponderous and that's it. And in fact, afterwards, it was like sort of when the excitement of finishing your exams at school or at university, where you want to go out and get absolutely tanked and party, but actually you're just so emotionally drained by the whole experience. So I think we had about two pints, and then dad and Gran went home, and I had a quiet night in, sort of just grinning.
Glorious.
Yeah.
And of course, Ipswich would go on to finish fifth in the Premiership the following season, qualifying for Europe, and George Burley would win Manager of the Season award. I mean, I bet you didn't think it could get that good, in the first season up.
No, absolutely not. And it was there was a lot of discussion about this at the time. From memory, we went to the first home game of the season, which I think was against Man United, and I think we drew it. You can check, but that was a point where we started to think, hold on a minute, this is, I don't think any of the big Premiership sides were expecting this, little provincial team to play any sort of football that would be challenging in the Premiership. But I think that's how we managed it, by playing, open passing.
Well, I think there is a sense, I think it's still, maybe not quite to the same extent, but I think it's still slightly true today that if you play good passing football in the in the Championship or Division One as it was then, it's harder to get up. But if you do get up, you're much better equipped to play at Premier League level. So I think you saw even with say Wigan, that when they got up, they actually played quite good football and they settled very quickly into the Premier League. Whereas if you come up playing a more direct, a more sort of pragmatic style, I think the lack of quality then gets exposed in the Premier League in a way it isn't one division down.
Yeah, I think there was quite a damning statistic that actually suggested otherwise, because when Cardiff City went up under Warnock, the people were saying that actually his pragmatic style may keep them up. And of course, Fulham, I know that was a slightly different case. They signed too many players and one thing and another. But I think nowadays that's probably the case. I think Ipswich had a bit of steel as well as that passing and that more kind of playing the ball on the deck attitude.
Yeah, I mean, clearly there's a risk there. But if you look at the teams who've gone up and have done really well, so I'd even class Sunderland in this, although that Sunderland team was based around Niall Quinn. There was decent football to get the ball wide and then get it in the box. But then Ipswich, Swansea, Wigan, Wolves, they're all teams who you know, could actually play. They weren't reliant on, you know, keeping it tight, keeping the shape and going direct. So, you know, I don't think anybody's gone up, and as maybe Stoke, I guess, will be the counter example, and really sort of taken the Premier League by storm, playing football that isn't sort of quote-unquote good football.
Yeah, well, it was certainly an amazing season for Ipswich that following season. And of course, Adam, you know, in terms of Ipswich Town, everybody lived happily ever after, didn't they?
That is exactly what has happened. And we've remained in the top five of British football ever since. No, I mean, it was that season was wonderful. And it was just so joyous, just bouncing along, you know, just winning at home and as you say, you know, made it up to fifth, which was kind of ridiculous, and then qualified for Europe.
And did okay beating Inter the following season at home in the first leg.
Well, the first round was against, I think it was against Sparta Moscow, and I think we won both of them. And then the second round was against Helsingborg. Now, I went to the away leg of that because there was now a huge travelling contingency for Ipswich fans. And so we flew up to Stockholm and then drove down to Helsingborg and sat in that stadium. And I can't remember the date, but it felt like it was October or November. And there was a Marcus Stewart match. There was snow on the ground. It's a small stadium and there were about, I don't know, it felt like several thousand. I expect it was probably more like 8,000 Ipswich fans. And it's open air. It's freezing. You know, it's absolutely freezing. But the row in front of me, who are hardcore fans, as soon as the whistle blew to start the match, they all took their tops off. so there was about 20, you know, not the most physically attractive men in the snow standing there. And that was you know, just to watch Ipswich win in Europe, even though it's Helsingborg and it's only the second round of the UEFA, was just glorious. And then the next one, as you say, it was Inter at home, and Alan Armstrong, who was another sort of, you know, very typical Ipswich player who scored regularly enough and was quite a hard man, but he had this. I think it was from a header, and I think it was an amazing leaping salmon header into the top corner against Inter at Portman Road. And you're just thinking, this is absolutely ridiculous. When is this going to end? And of course, the answer to that was at the San Siro, where we got absolutely hammered, quite rightly so. But that was fun.
Yeah.
And then we got relegated.
Yeah, and we'll leave it there. We'll leave it there because Ipswich Town fans have suffered enough of late. Let them remember these fond memories. But Adam, thank you very much for dissecting that one with it. It's been an absolute pleasure. For more stories like that, do check out theblizzard.co.uk. But yeah, Adam, thank you very much for coming on the pod.
My pleasure. Nice to relive some happy memories.
Jonathan, a pleasure as always.
Cheers, thank you.
We'll see you next week, everybody. Ta-ta.
Forward by Morgan, up by Croft. Naylor. He stabbed it through. Roycer is onside. Roycer! Premiership!
for George Burley. Nails bitten to the quick. But elevation now, surely assured.
This was a Stakhanov production.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.